Welcome to Hub Headlines. Today's program features the best commentary and analysis published in the Hub for April 26. Up first is Andrew Evans, writing on how boosting birth rates is possible if we stop taxing mothers.
In 2022, Canadian fertility hit its lowest rate ever at 1.33 per woman, far below replacement level fertility of 2.1 children per woman, while 10 of 13 provinces also hit their lowest ever levels. There are various factors behind the decline in fertility rates. Curtis Limonstone has studied them in Canada and around the world. Some, such as housing or childcare costs, are susceptible to policy responses. Others, such as secularization in particular or shifting societal values in general, may be less so. But there is a growing sense in policy and political circles that we ought to try something new. Declining fertility rates have various consequences, including a complete reliance on immigration for any population growth which, as Sean Speer has previously outlined for the Hub, comes with its own challenges. As fertility rates have fallen in Canada and elsewhere, we're seeing renewed interest in pronatal policies to try to reverse these trends and boost birth rates. We've seen the adoption of such policies in countries such as Hungary, Poland, Greece, Japan, and Finland. In fact, more than one quarter of UN countries have some form of pronatalist policy, though more, incidentally, had policies to discourage fertility rates. The results of pronatalism are a bit mixed. Research shows that pronatal policy can boost fertility on the margins, but at a high cost. As Stone outlined in a 2020 study for the Pro Family Institute for Family Studies, pronatal incentives do work. More money does yield more babies. Anybody saying otherwise is mischaracterizing the research. But it takes a lot of money. The key point here is that if Canadian policymakers wanted to boost birth rates, it would require something big and bold. The Canada Child Benefit and other family benefits are important for recognizing the unique costs of child rearing and the positive externalities of kids. But they're generally not big enough to induce changes in family planning or fertility rates. It prompts the question, what might be sufficient to change families' choices or perhaps bring them closer in line with their actual preferences? Several years ago, now Manhattan Institute President Rehan Salam wrote a slightly tongue-in-cheek essay in which he argued that childless households ought to pay higher tax rates. His basic argument was that there's an inherent inequity between parents and non-parents, including, but not limited to, the notion that children themselves will be future taxpayers. However, one can support lower tax rates for parents without necessarily endorsing higher taxes on non-parents. One radical idea would be to grant an income tax exemption for women on the basis of the number of children that they have. For one child, a one-year exemption would be granted, two kids would be granted a four-year exemption, three kids would be given 10 years of tax-free status, and an exemption for life would be granted if they have four or more children. Exemptions would be applied when mothers return to work, and not during a maternity leave, ensuring the program is fair to moms and provides tangible benefits. An income tax exemption would create a progressively scaling benefit to having more children, allowing for more money to be kept at home to pay for the costs of a growing family. It would also provide an incentive to return to work as well, for eligible women wouldn't be taxed on their income. This would help to ensure that women don't face a disincentive if they choose to return to the workplace. We don't want pronatalism to reverse the tremendous progress of female participation in the labor force. The inherent incentive in such a bold proposal could be powerful. Even at three children, which according to the 2021 census presently represents 1,132,605 families, a 10-year income tax exemption would likely have a significant signaling effect for families to have more children, and for women to realize the benefits by ultimately returning to work. Although such a policy would lower revenues for federal and provincial governments, it would potentially pay in full or in part for itself through future tax receipts, including toward the long-term sustainability of the Canada Pension Plan. The short-run losses, in other words, would be offset by more future taxpayers. Once such a policy was in place, it would be politically impossible to remove. New parents who would be expecting their benefit would revolt against a party or government that took it away. This kind of long-term stability is exactly what people need to make life choices about marriage and family formation. A high level of trust is required, and this kind of political lock-in will provide just that. It would also, in theory, increase the political participation of parents with young kids, which similarly strikes us as a healthy development in light of recent commentary about a family-unfriendly culture. Birth rates are hard for public policy to change, but it doesn't mean that we shouldn't try. Canadian policymakers should be bold. It would be good for families and the country as a whole.
That was a commentary by Andrew Evans. He is a master's student at Columbia University, where he is also a research assistant at the Center on Global Energy Policy. You can find the full text of his article on our website, thehub.ca. Our second essay is by Don Kerr, writing on why Canada's population growth is exploding.
As a professional demographer who has carefully followed Canada's demographic evolution over the past 3 decades, I am shocked by some of the most recent demographic data released by Statistics Canada. From 1991 through to 2015, the year in which the current government was first elected, the annual growth in Canada's population grew in a predictable manner at an average of roughly 320,000 persons per year. Following 2015, that growth has rapidly accelerated. Following a temporary dip in population growth due to the outbreak of the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020, Canada's population growth reached just over 500,000 in 2021, close to 1 million in 2022, and then an astronomical 1.27 million persons in 2023. Put another way, whereas for several decades Canada's population growth rate hovered at about 1% annually, this rate has more than tripled in a few short years, up to 3.3% in 2023. In even starker terms, the 2023 rate of population growth is like adding a new Saskatchewan to Canada's total population in slightly less than a single calendar year. As of 2023, there is not a single country in the G7 or in the OECD that has a population growth rate even close to Canada's. Population growth in the U.S., for comparison, is currently at about 0.5%. Even prior to the recent upturn, Canada's rate of population growth was actually the highest in the G7 and among the highest in the OECD. Most astoundingly, in making international comparisons, Statistics Canada now points out that Canada in 2023 is among the 20 fastest growing countries in the world, ranked beside several very high fertility countries, largely situated in sub-Saharan Africa. While Canada's current population growth of 3.3% is obviously not sustainable, a constant growth rate of 3.3% would imply a doubling in Canada's total population in under 25 years. The last time Canada saw a growth rate comparable to this was fully 67 years ago. In 1957, Canada was close to the height of its baby boom, with a birth rate close to 4 births per woman. Slowly over decades, this growth rate gradually declined as fertility rates fell. No abrupt shifts here. Most recently, Canada's growth has almost entirely been the result of international migration at 97.6% as the rate of natural increase, births minus deaths, has continued to decline steadily. Hence, the pace at which Canada's population grows in a predictable manner can be seen as a function of Canada's immigration policy. Meaning then that this is a policy problem that the federal government, in consultation with the provinces, can solve itself by setting and regulating immigration targets. This includes both permanent immigration, referring to economic, family, and refugee classes, as well as the increase in non-permanent residents, referring to international students, temporary work permits, and asylum claimants. The question remains as to how we have gotten into this situation in the first place. When Sean Fraser was first appointed to the Trudeau cabinet as immigration minister in the fall of 2021, Canada's growth rate was roughly 1%. By the time he was shifted from immigration to housing and infrastructure in the summer of 2023, Canada's growth rate had climbed to its current heights. As many commenters have pointed out, it is somewhat ironic that the minister appointed to fix the issue of housing affordability was the Minister of Immigration who allowed this unprecedented growth in population. In the summer of 2023, when Canada's population was growing at a rate that had not been seen for almost 70 years, Fraser attempted to downplay the link between population growth and rising housing costs, saying that the solution to the country's housing woes should not involve closing the door to newcomers. The data from both Statistics Canada and the Canadian Housing and Mortgage Corporation, or CMHC, belie the minister's baffling assertion. Canada's demographic growth has clearly outpaced its housing stock. Coming out of the pandemic, housing starts climbed to 271,000 in 2021, the highest number recorded for half a century, only to drop slightly in 2022 and 2023. In total, Canada witnessed about 800,000 housing starts over the 2021-2023 period, whereas over this same period, Canada's population grew by over 2.5 million. The fact that the CMHC forecasts fewer than 224,000 starts in 2024 and only 232,000 in 2025 does not bode well for housing affordability in Canada, particularly in the context of continuing rapid population growth. Having said all this, it seems that the federal government has finally woken up to this issue and is now committed to reducing this growth. Current Immigration Minister Mark Miller has made overtures towards slowing Canada's population growth, even potentially back down to historically sustainable levels. Most importantly, Miller recently announced that the proportion of non-permanent residents, or NPRs, in Canada will be reduced from its current level of fully 6.2% of the total Canadian population down to 5% over the next 3 years. For context, NPRs were only about 3.1% of Canada's population in 2021. By NPRs, the federal government is referring to international students, persons in Canada on temporary work permits, as well as asylum claimants. As the government has already capped and reduced the number of international students, a sizable share of this reduction will occur among persons with temporary work permits. Over 60% of Canada's population growth in 2023 was a byproduct of the increase in the number of NPRs. If immediately implemented, Canada could shift from admitting an additional 800,000 NPRs in 2023 to seeing a decline in the number of NPRs by perhaps -160,000 in 2024, serving to reduce Canada's rate of growth. Merely with this reform, and continuing with its current commitment to welcoming roughly 500,000 landed immigrants yearly over the next several years, Canada's growth rate could return to sanity. The issue remains as to how successful the government will be in implementing this reform. The dramatic shift in Canada's rate of population growth has inevitably had important consequences, and not all of them positive. Take, for example, the increasing strain on the country's already burdened health and social services. In policy terms, a steady, gradual upturn in population growth is far better for planning future labor force, housing, and infrastructure needs. Overall, Canada will be well served into the future by returning to and maintaining a predictable rate of population growth and avoiding the rather abrupt shifts experienced most recently. A majority of Canadians have long been supportive of Canadian immigration policy. The recent mishandling of this file has jeopardized this consensus, hopefully not irreparably.
That was a commentary by Don Kerr. He is a demographer who teaches at King's University College at Western University. That's it for today's edition of Hub Headlines. We hope you enjoyed the program. To receive all our best commentary and analysis each morning by email, subscribe to The Hub for as little as 25 cents a day. You can do that right now at thehub.ca. Hub Headlines is produced by Alicia Rao. Thanks for listening.